outside London, do you know, or was it within?
Yeah, it was country-wide.
I mean, it was obviously official.
Yeah.
It was harder to, in London it'd be easy to communicate, but as you got further away, presumably.
Yeah, you probably could get away with it a bit more. I think it depends on your local locals and whether they would, which side they were on, how you could get away with it or not. I've got some rosemary that I'm going to pass around, so if anyone wants to have a sniff.
For remembrance.
For remembrance, yeah. So, let's talk about mince pies.
Well, they had me too.
Mince pies actually in the 17th century were known as coffins.
Rosemary, oh yes.
So mince pies were often known as coffins because they were not always round in shape. Some of them were rectangular. And some of them actually, prior to the ban, actually had a pastry baby on the top.
Big
mouth, or? So they were to represent the manger. And here's a recipe for how you make a minced pie, or shred pies, so shredded meat pies. And it's from the English Housewife by Gervase Markham. And he wrote this in 1615. And he says, take a leg of mutton and put the best of the flesh from the bone. Mm-hmm. Boil it well and put it to the best mutton suet and shred it very small. Then spread it abroad and freshen it with salt, cloves and mace, and put a good store of currants, grape raisins, prunes, dates sliced and some orange peels sliced. Then bring all well mixed together, put it into the coffin and strew a store of sugar on top of the meat and upon the lid. So you've got this idea of the kind of sweet and the sour, which a lot of people don't really kind of go for these days. But it was quite
texture more that sounds odd, mixing the sort of minced mutton with the fruit.
Yeah.
They do have still that today.
Yeah, people still, I suppose you see it
in Moroccan type stuff. Yeah, but
because that's actually where the idea of that kind of food came from was the Middle East.
But quite often use apricots and stuff, don't you? Suppose it's a currant and the oranges. It's quite a mixture of fruit.
Yeah, it is quite a mixture of fruit, isn't it? Yeah. So you're supposed to eat mince pie for the whole of the 12 days of Christmas, and it will bring you good luck if you did that. But they were bigger than our pie, so if you can imagine one that's about 4 or 5 times bigger than your usual mince pie.
So about the same size of a medium pork pie. Yeah, it's a medium pork pie,
so they're quite big.
You've got a happy month for every day you eat.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, really?
If you manage for 12, you'd be quiet.
My father would have had many, many months.
I think you're only up to 12 for the next year.
So, the plum pottage, you're probably wondering what the plum pottage is. And that was actually a precursor to plum pudding.
Plum pudding, oh yes.
And this was made of gruel, fruits and meat and mixed together in a cooked in a broth. Mm-hmm. And there was a Swiss gentleman who came to London in 1725 called Caesar de Saussure, and he said about the plum pottage, on the festival day, churches, the entrances of houses, rooms, kitchens and halls are decked with laurels, rosemary and other greenery. Everyone from the king to the artisan eats soups and Christmas pies. The soup is called Christmas porridge, and is a dish few foreigners find to their tastes. I must describe it to you because it will amuse you. You must stew dried raisins, plums and spice in a broth. Rich people add wine and others beer. And it is a great treat for English people, but I assure you it's not for me.
Sounds all right. Might be a bit vinegar. I imagine with a beer... tastes a bit odd when you cook too much beer.
Yeah, I suppose you'd have to kind of boil off all the alcohol. As long as you did that, it probably tastes all right. Bit of a gravy, I suppose, but yeah. The drink they would drink, as I said, we had the punch bowl on the table.
Oh, yes.
Does anyone know where the word punch comes from? Which country?
I think I did, but I can't remember.
It's actually from India.
Oh, is it?
So it, the word punch, so P-U-N-J... That means five in Indian. So basically...
Would that be Hindi or something? Or
yeah, I think so.
Like the Punjab.
So the tradition is that you have five ingredients in your punch. So spirits, water, lemon, sugar and spice would make up your punch. And posset was another drink that you'd have at Christmas.
Oh, posset,
and this is really,
yes.
really popular in the 17th century.
Yes, it was.
And this year we've actually got a new object that is in our 17th century room,
oh,
and it's called a posset pot.
Oh,
and
posset pot.
The posset pot is earthenware, and it's got two handles either side of it, and then it's got a little spout. We'll talk about what the spout's for. So a posset was a spiced, sweet and warm confection made of ale, cider, wine or sherry, and thickened with eggs, cream or warm milk, which were curdled as they poured that over the liquor. So that's you know, you talked about the curdling earlier.
That sounds quite grim.
Yeah, so apparently they absolutely loved it at that time. And so what you do is you'd suck up the warm liquid with the spout, and then you'd use a spoon to eat the curds. So,
oh, I see.
And apparently it's quite good for, they used to feed it for invalids. If
they did,
ill,
didn't they?
Like that, so.
Anybody had pneumonia or croup or whatever.
Yeah, so you get to posset.
Horrible noise, that.
We are quite drunk on that. So let's move forward again. And we're now in our drawing room of 1830. So it's our fifth room.
Ooh, 1830.
So the furniture is arranged in groups. And there is a large table left to centre with four chairs around it. Against the left-hand wall, a comfortable sofa is set. On the opposite side, French windows, an innovation in Regency England, extend from floor to ceiling, opening straight onto a balcony. In a conscious effort to harmonise colour and tone, all the seating furniture in this room has been upholstered in a blue silk, and the same material has been used for the rich window drapes. Even the carpet on the floor, with its classical design, uses blue as its base colour. So this room is actually set up for a small family party on Twelfth night, so the 6th of January. And on the table is a cake with white icing and a gilded gold crown on the top. And there's also a decanter of red wine beside it and a number of small, delicate wine glasses for the guests. Next to each person's plate, there are small cards with characters on them. So this night actually was all about kind of playing different characters and kind of having a good time. Because,
sort of charades.
Yeah, a bit like charades. So in Georgian times, because you actually had to abide by certain rules of behaviour, so you had to sit a certain way, you had to act a certain way, and the Twelfth Night was an opportunity that you could actually not do that for a night, so you could have fun, and people loved it. So, but this idea of having a Twelfth Night celebration actually went back to the winter solstice, and there was Saturnalia, the Feast of Saturnalia, and there would be a Lord of Misrule, and he would rule over everyone and tell them what they had to do, and it was usually a very drunken affair. But for the Georgians, they actually kind of sort of made it a little bit more Georgian, so it wasn't as raucous. But the 12th cake in the middle of the table actually has inside it a pea and a bean.
Do we know how Mithrili they were? I mean, were they as bad, for example, as some of the Roman emperors were?
So probably the Saturnalia feast was similar to that, because that does go back to Roman times.
But the Georgians
they used to kind of role play. There was some of that sort of stuff going on. If when you got the pea, you become the queen. When you got the bean, you became the king. So if you were the servant, or if you were a child, then if you got those things, you could rule over the household for the evening. So if you were the king, you could sit down anywhere you liked and you can kind of relax and everyone would have to copy you. So you could be very, you know, kind of wild and crazy on that evening. And bakers used to really go for it with their cakes as well. They used to make these enormous cakes and they were decorated with icing and figures. And some of the figures were made of sugar paste and some were made of plaster of Paris.
Yes,
if you were less well off, then you'd have Twelfth Night buns, so little iced buns. And people would go up to London to see the confectioners' windows, which had these amazing cakes in them. And there were kind of boys that would go along and play tricks on the people going up to see the cakes. So what they would do is they would pin together people. So if you were a gentleman, you had a long tailcoat on, and you were a lady with a long skirt, they would pin together the tailcoat and the skirt together, so you couldn't escape each other. And in those days, that was probably a good way of meeting a man, if you were a lady, because you couldn't just approach someone, you'd have to kind of be introduced formally, and there was all these kind of etiquette around it, so the boys might have helped with some romance there. They also would pin people to bakers' windows as well, so they were very naughty.
So at the end of the 19th century, Twelfth Night had declined, which is quite a shame, really, because the Bank Holidays Act came in 1871, which made the 25th of December and the 26th of December the main bank holidays. And so therefore all of these traditions